When I was 12 years old, I got an unusual opportunity. I was able to be involved in a study abroad program where I would live in England for several months, from a very small town in the US originally. The program was run through my middle school, and I went over to England with a group of 15 other 12-year-olds. Before we went to the homes we would be living in for the next few months, we ended up staying in London for about a week to do some sightseeing. When we got there, we were staying in a small hostel downtown, and my school had essentially rented out the entire hostel for the kids and for the adults that were chaperoning the trip. If I remember correctly, there were two adults with us. Every day, we'd have a scheduled activity, and then we'd have a significant amount of free time where we were allowed to explore the city as a group with just the kids and no adults. The second day, we were there, and my friends and I were out together, and we ended up stopping to look at some kiosks that had souvenirs. We were about a block from our hostel. I was around the backside of the kiosk. It would look like I was there alone, and I felt someone grab my arm. I turn around to see a middle-aged man, most likely homeless, looking at me, and he says, "Hello there, pretty little girl," in the creepiest voice I've ever heard. I immediately darted out of the other side of the kiosk, back to my friends. Before I could even tell them what happened, he came around the corner and got super close to me and said, "You can run, you can hide, but I'll find you." And then he walked away. I immediately grabbed my friend and started pulling her back towards the direction of our hostel. I was crying, and when we got back there, we told our chaperones what happened. They essentially brushed it off and didn't do anything. Every day we were in London from then on, I would see him 1 to 3 times a day when we were out. He would never get close, would never say anything, but he would always be smiling and watching me. Every time I would see him, I would point out to either one of the chaperones or another kid in our group. On the last day we were there, we were getting ready to leave, and we're catching a train from London to Leeds. While we were waiting at the train platform, I hear, "Bye bye, little girl. I'll see you soon." And I turn around, and sure enough, he's there. He quickly leaves, and again, no one in my group really does anything. Except for the other kids, they were all completely freaked out. I never saw him again after seeing him on the train platform, but I still remember his voice. Every time I think of it, I get a shiver down my spine and think about how close to danger I was. First off, this isn't my story, but rather my mother's. The first time I heard this, I was about 12 years old, and ever since then, I've never been able to forget it. When my mum was a little girl, her family moved into a small house in Lansing, Michigan. My mother said that immediately she got this overwhelming feeling of uneasiness when she first walked through the threshold, and that's how she knew something wasn't right. Within a few weeks, she started having insanely intense night terrors about a man with a hat, which she called the Hat Man. She said that he started out just standing outside her window, staring in. But as time progressed, he made it into the corner of her room, and then to the end of her bed, and then finally standing right over her. She said, and I quote, "It was terrifying because I couldn't see his face, no matter how hard I tried or how close he was. What made it worse is that he just had this malevolent, evil energy that made me sick whenever he was in the room." After about a week of complaining to her parents about the Hat Man, they took her to the doctors and she was prescribed sleeping pills. And of course, they didn't work, and the night terrors continued. By this time, her birthday had rolled around and her parents gave her a baby doll. But not just your average run-of-the-mill baby doll. It was one that laughed and crawled when you put batteries in it and switched it on. Immediately, my mum was scared of it because that very night, my mum woke up and the doll was laughing and crawling across the floor as the Hat Man stood looming over it. This happened for several nights before my mum's parents finally duct taped the switch so that it remained on the off position. But alas, the doll still laughed and crawled in the middle of the night. So instead of throwing it away, my mum's parents decided to take the batteries out and pray that it didn't happen again. The doll didn't move for a few nights, and my mum thought that she was out of the woods, but she was wrong. One night, my grandma was woken up by laughter in the living room in the middle of the night. Of course, she just assumed it was one of her daughters, so she walked out the living room, but what she saw stopped her dead in her tracks. Her hair stood on end as she witnessed this baby doll that didn't have batteries in it, crawling right after her. Meanwhile, my mum was lying in bed, unable to move, as the Hat Man stood over her and laughed maniacally. Finally, she was able to scream and her mother came rushing in. There wasn't much to the story after that, except for the fact that they moved houses not long after, and my mother still sees the man to this day standing over her bed. However, recently I decided to Google the Hat Man. Turns out many people from all over the globe have seen this very same entity. But what really gets me is they all describe its energy and the way it looks the same way. Evil. Got some D&D this morning and it brought this story back to mind, so I figured I'd share it here. During high school and college, I worked at Dunkin' Donuts for about 7 years and bounced around to a few different locations. I was used to working at the D&D in my town, where we would get the yeast rings delivered periodically and frost them ourselves as needed. I transferred to a new shop about half an hour from my house with all the same responsibilities, except for the donuts. They were delivered by corporate, and they arrived frosted almost perfectly. They looked like the plastic donuts they show in the commercials, always round and not squished together, and they would dip them in frosting so it was evenly spread and neat. It was a busy Saturday morning, and we were close to Valentine's Day, so we had a fresh order of brownie battered donuts delivered that morning. We were slammed, which was normal for a weekend, so it wasn't out of the ordinary to see my manager, who I'll call Jeremy, running around stressed out. When he ran past me, I didn't think anything of it, and I continued making sandwiches at the sandwich station. He rushed by carrying a pastry tray, and I watched him begin frantically throwing something in the trash, looking worried as hell. At first I laughed and said, "Jeremy, what the heck are you doing?" He straightened out and looked absolutely beside himself. I've never seen Jeremy look so lost, so I asked what was going on and if something was wrong. "Someone filled the brownie batter donuts with staples." He told me he got a phone call from corporate that one of our stores in our chain, which contained 10, had somehow discovered multiple staples in every donut in their order. That was at least 48 donuts for our store, and more or less for the other 9, depending on their sales. They told Jeremy that we had to get rid of the most recent delivery, because whoever put the batter in the filler dumped a ton of staples in it as well. Thankfully, we hadn't sold all of the previous order yet from the morning, because it was still relatively early. But the more I thought about it, the more I felt like I was going to be sick. What if a young child had gotten one of them? I pictured the family sitting at home on a Saturday morning, going to get some drinks and donuts for the kids, and imagined everything else that could have happened after. I never found out what came of it, and as far as I know, neither did my boss. I'm assuming nothing happened, because I thankfully never heard anything on the news. Makes me wonder if they covered it up, and I hope they were able to find out who did it. This happened a few years ago. I was doing my masters and working in my dream school in C. Life was great and I woke up ready to conquer the day. Yeah, I was one of those people. However, this incident sort of took it out of me and I was low-key ready to get out. Throughout my masters, I was active on many dating apps. Tinder, Bumble, Hinge, OkCupid. I would from time to time meet up with people and have a great time. This is one such story. One night on my third semester, I was hanging out with some friends and swiping left and right on Tinder. I matched with Tracy, who identified as she, her. We matched and an hour later we started talking. She was great to talk to, very easy to talk to and had a sarcastic sense of humour. We clicked immediately. The only thing was that she never really spoke about her personal life. As in, every time we would talk about jobs, families and pets, she would never really answer. Or it would be very general. Like for work, she said, "I sometimes work at a debt collector's office." When I asked her how that was, she said, "I don't know really." I wrote it off as her not really wanting to share to someone who could just be a hookup. Apart from joking, most of our chats were sexual in nature. I told her I wasn't looking for anything serious and just wanted to have fun from time to time. She shared the same feeling and we talked about how everything was so serious and she was just wanting to have some fun. We both kept talking almost a week, and every day she would ask me to come over. This started from the night we matched. Within 2 hours of talking, she asked me to come over. I was very busy that week, so I told her it wouldn't be possible, but she would never fail to invite me over every night. She was also very persistent. It would go on for around 20 or 30 minutes, her asking me to come over, giving me ideas on how I could manage my work, and of course listing all the perks I would get. However, I just couldn't find the time. During our conversations, I learned she primarily survived on a trust fund. Her parents were filthy rich. They'd brought her a house where she lived alone. Eventually, at the end of our first week on Tinder, I asked Tracy to hang out. She was beyond ecstatic, but it soon turned to be a sort of argument. I was inviting her to my friend's party and bars afterwards, but she stayed put on the idea of me coming to her. We argued for about a solid hour, me trying to keep it fun and silly, but I could tell she was getting annoyed. At one point, she didn't text me back, and without thinking much of it, I went ahead to the party. A couple of hours later, she texted me asking for my friend's address. I sent it to her, and an hour later she arrived. We met, and she was so much fun. She wasn't irritated anymore, and I was glad. We hung out with my friends. She was super funny, and all of them liked having her there. As my friends headed out to the bars, I asked her to come back to my apartment. She agreed and we left. We both talked and had a lot of fun. During our conversations, we started talking about kinks, and she said yes to everything, justifying it by her adventure attitude. Now that I think about it, that may have been a red flag. That night was no different. She didn't say no or hesitate to anything we did. I told her it was okay to stay over if she wanted, but she denied and left around 2 or 3 a.m. There was one thing that happened a lot that night. I wasn't thinking in my brain, so I didn't catch it beforehand. But from the moment we met, she kept pestering me on how I should come to hers every chance she got, and she commented that her place would be a better idea. Even at the end, I remember her saying something like, she wouldn't have had to leave if it was her home, and I could have made her breakfast in the morning. She basically said it to the point where I got annoyed and promised her that the next time would be at her place. We didn't speak much after that night. The conversation kind of died because her general answers. I didn't mind much. We did, however, talk enough to keep in touch, and every day I'd get asked to come over. I'd had some time off following that Wednesday, so I agreed. I asked her for our location, and she sent it to me. It was around 50 minutes away, outside the city. I asked her if we could just meet when she was in the city, but her mood changed and cashed in the promise that I made last time we met. I felt bad, so I said yes, and she got super happy. I made my drive about 9 p.m, and nearing to her house, I realised how far I'd actually come from the city, how tucked away it was. Now, I see these things clearly, but back then, it was just a hint of doubt, and then soon vanished as soon as I saw Tracy at the door, dressed in lingerie. She pulled me inside, and we immediately got to it. After a few minutes, she stopped and asked me to go to her bedroom and wait. It was one on the first floor. She stayed on the main floor to go get something. And the entire time I was alone, I kept thinking this couldn't be a trust fund sponsored house. It was big, but it was dirty and not maintained. Most of the furniture was old and ragged, except for a few newish things that were here and there. Her bedroom was very dimly lit, and blackout curtains were drawn. I spread them apart and let some light in. It was almost an empty room. Her bed frame seemed cheap and not sturdy. Her clothes were kept in a cabinet, one of those glass cabinets used for displaying china, crockery awards and that sort of thing. She did have a vinyl player and a lot of records on the ground next to it. My gut was twisting and turning inside, just by me walking around her room. A sort of self-help system went off and I exited the room towards the stairs of the house. I was being quiet because I wanted to leave without her knowing. As I got to the staircase, I heard her talking, and then I heard another person talking, and then another person. I could hear three voices rapidly talking back and forth in a light hush. I still remember how I felt in that moment. My ears got hot and my whole body tensed up. I walked to a window nearby, contemplating if I could break anything just to jump out. It wasn't feasible. So I pumped myself up. I'm 6 foot and 240 pounds, and began walking down the stairs as lightly as I could. I got halfway down and carefully listened. Their voices were coming from the opposite side of the main door. I got my car key out swiftly and rested my thumb on the unlock button. Once I mustered up the courage, which felt like a lifetime, I ran off the stairs and straight to the door. There were three locks on it, those twisting ones. As I was unlocking, I could hear Tracy calling me. Also, I felt more than one person shuffling towards me. I swung the door open and ran out to my car. I sat in there and locked the doors as she said, "They're just my parents." She got to my car and rested her hand on the side mirror, still in lingerie. She kept calling out my name. I could faintly see two people who didn't come out but were standing still at the door, a man and a woman. Without thinking twice, I put the car in reverse and flew out there. I drove back in a frenzy. The thing that messes with me most and sends chills down my spine, even today, is the couple of words I can make out from the conversation. Someone said, "Well, do it your way then."